I'm with Jonathan Mills, the director of the Edinburgh Festival. He's just opened and launched this year's programme. Jonathan, you've opened this year's festival with something that many Scots nationalists might regard as fairly provocative, the pro-Hanoverian, anti-Jacobite piece by Handel, Judas Maccabeus. Don't you regard that as being a fairly provocative act, given it's the year of homecoming this year?
Quite deliberately so. And it may be it takes a kind of larrikin Aussie to get away with it. I'm about to find out. But what I wanted to do is I wanted to say that history is not some static, sterile idea, and that the things that are contested to this day perhaps form part of people's ideas and debates from the 18th century, from the 12th century. I want to animate not only history, I want to animate the whole conversation of ideas that surrounds the performing arts and the visual arts itself. And so to actually present people with a very beautiful piece of Baroque music that sounds lovely but has this sting in its tail, has this sting in its history, let's face it, Handel knew which side his bread was buttered. He was sucking up big time to the Duke of Cumberland when he wrote "See the Conquering Hero Comes." But that conquering hero had just gone and butchered a whole bunch of people in a battleground on Culloden.
Now, you've also chosen this year, despite the fact that Scotland is celebrating the 250th anniversary, the birth of Robbie Burns, with this whole series of more than 300 events across Scotland, not to explicitly include Robert Burns in this year's programme. Explain why. I mean, again, some people might say that you're just being a little deliberately contrarian.
Well, I'm not. I think that was a much more practical decision. As you mentioned, 300-odd events for Burns didn't need an additional one from me. Whereas, in a year of homecoming, what I was keen that the International Festival could make as a contribution to this broad year of homecoming, and let's be clear, it's not a year of Burns, it's a year of homecoming. It's a broad celebration of ideas and inspiration of Scotland's effect on the rest of the world, inviting people of Scottish descent, of Scottish interests, of Scottish associations to come to Scotland or to come home to Scotland. So it is broader than Burns. And what I realised was that if I didn't invite people to see the work of Robert Henryson or J.M. Barrie, no one else was likely to do so. Scotland is not a one-liner. Scotland is a very diverse, pluralistic, complex society. And I felt that Burns was well and truly dealt with in many, many ways, in many eloquent ways, by others, but that other things would not be dealt with at all if I didn't pick them up.
And one of the core themes in this year's festival is, of course, the Scottish Enlightenment, which many Scots and historians regard as Scotland's one of Scotland's greatest contributions to Western modern culture, modern history, modern thinking. Again, this is presumably your core contribution to the homecoming.
What we're doing in this year's Edinburgh International Festival is we're taking as a point of departure, but not an end point necessarily, the 18th century and the Enlightenment. And that we have prepared a programme that deals with some of the urgent and ongoing philosophical discussions that emerged out of that period of intellectual, artistic, scientific discovery and firmament that was European. But if it was European, it was British. And if it was British, it was Scottish. And if it was Scottish, it was from Edinburgh. And so one focuses down and down and down to the kinds of conversations that one might imagine that David Hume or James Watt might have had, or Adam Smith, for that matter, might have had in this city sometime in the 18th century. Now, let's not be rosy-eyed and dewy-eyed about it. Let's make sure that when we are celebrating the Enlightenment, we are also understanding what happened just before, what happened afterwards. It's consistent set of influences and so forth. And I have said that an Enlightenment quite often is accompanied by an Endarkenment. And so if we've got a work like Optimism, which is a new theatre piece from Australia based on Candide by Voltaire, a wonderful topsy-turvy journey in search of utopia that goes horribly wrong and ends up somewhere in suburbia in Australia with a bunch of raucous Aussie clowns. Well, if you're thinking about that as it's having its origins in the 18th century, or you're thinking about the pact that Dr. Faust makes with Mephistopheles, that a rational, educated man makes with the devil in his voracious quest for ever new knowledge, and how that all goes terribly wrong, tragically wrong, and we have that in the form of a very intriguing contemporary production from Silviu Pucuretti, the great Romanian director, 100 people on stage, the Lowland Hall at Ingolstadt brimming with all sorts of pyrotechnical effects. If you have those two as the anchoring points of a broad conversation about the 18th century, then it was irresistible to me to bring some things that were not exactly enlightening, like the story of Janet Horne, who in 1727 became the last woman to be burnt as a witch in Scotland. Or Robert Henryson's exquisite epic poem, The Testament of Crusade, dating from the 15th century, itself an inspiration for Shakespeare in his play Troilus and Cressida, to J.M. Barrie and his work, his perhaps the most beautiful fairy story or children's story ever written is Peter Pan, and Mabu Mayan's version, Peter and Wendy, based on the Barrie classic, I think is brimming with Edinburgh connections. Our visual arts programme has all sorts of connections, whether it's Joshua Mosley's plasticine animation of an imaginary conversation between two French philosophers, or whether it's Joseph Kossuth paying tribute to Darwin as a student at Edinburgh University. There are all sorts of really intriguing connections and intriguing ideas to present to people throughout the length and breadth of the programme.
There's something quite opposite about this, of course, because Edinburgh is suffering disproportionately at the moment because of the recession. You said in December that you felt that the your own sponsorship may face problems because of the recession. You were anxious whether or not corporations would be able to afford the levels of sponsorship you had last year, yet you're reporting that you've actually increased corporate sponsorship and donations by 20% this year. Can you just explain what you think has made it work for you? Why do you think you have managed to increase contributions from the corporate sector and from donors to the festival?
That's a very difficult question to answer. I'm really, if I'm honest with you, not sure. What I would hope was the answer was that there is an integrity to the program, there is an integrity to the organization that is able to weather the odd temporary storm, however ferocious it may be. Of course, when I spoke in December, like any festival director, I'm always nervous about being able to afford all my wonderful plans. And there is never, ever enough money to do a festival. That's part of the landscape. But there's not been any. It's not been any more difficult this year than it always is to put a festival together. What I would say is that if people have chosen to support the program, I would hope it's because of the strength of the program. I would hope it's because they see that at a time when we are truly valuing or evaluating our what matters to us, that there is a very important part of everyone's heart that belongs to Edinburgh and its festivals and what its festivals can do for this city. So I'd hope we wouldn't be abandoned. I think there's no rational reason for us to be abandoned. And let me tell you, we haven't been. In fact, we've got great support from banks. We've got great support from foreign governments, trusts and foundations and individual donors.
Can I ask, you've obviously noticed the strong reaction that the new Manchester Festival programme received last week. It's got a lot of contemporary work. It's got work with Elbow, Kraftwerk, Rufus Wainwright. Do you feel that Manchester is becoming a competitor to Edinburgh, or do you think that actually they complement each other? And some people might say that you ought also to be including much more genuinely contemporary musical work as well as traditional classical and historic work.
I don't believe that Manchester is a competitor. I believe Manchester is such a different kind of festival to our own that no one is going to confuse the two. And I do believe that not only Manchester, but Brighton, Manchester, Edinburgh, and many other large and small festivals, the length and breadth of the UK, Belfast Festival, many others, together make an enormously important contribution because they're different and because they are able to evolve rather than be imposed in their own way, at their own pace. In terms of contemporary performance and contemporary practice, there is absolutely no doubt and there is no reticence for me to include more contemporary popular music in our program. The problem for us to date is that we have not identified the projects that we are guaranteed will do what we need it to do. We are a different program to Manchester. There is no guarantee that any of these projects will work in Manchester, and that's part of the point. Whereas we need to ensure to a much greater extent that things work when they come to Edinburgh.
Why do you say that? Explain.
Well, I mean, the Manchester Festival is commissioning new work, all of it new work. There's no way they can know whether it's going to work or not. Mm-hmm. There's no way on the world. There are fantastic names that they've got, but it doesn't mean it's going to actually be good. It doesn't mean it's going. I have high hopes for every single one of it, and the evidence of last year was very clear that much of it did work, but they take a risk every single step of the way, and what we are saying is that we're a very different kind of entity, we're a very different kind of beast, and that for us to get to the first point of Manchester would require us to have years of development and workshops.
And you said when you unveiled the programme that you regarded this as increasing proof, in fact, that there was life in the arts outside London.
Well, there's no doubt of that. And I think one of the things that people need to be reminded of is that there is sophistication, ingenuity, imagination and flair way beyond the concert halls of the Barbican and the South Bank Centre and so forth. It's always been the case, but there does seem to be, not in the public's mind, but in the commentariat's mind, a sort of sense that if it doesn't happen in London, it doesn't really matter.
Jonathan Mills, thank you very much indeed.
Great pleasure.